Diva Award, that you won the Diva Award.
Isn't that funny? They actually changed the name of that award, but I thought it was kind of fun. That was fun. That was a few years ago.
I want to win the Diva Award. I love that. I thought that was great.
I got to be a diva for an hour.
Well, that's great. And then you were number one retail producer in Atlanta for many, many, many years. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
And you represent tenants such as Max, Marshalls, HomeGoods, Toys R Us, Babies R Us, Nordstrom Rack, and you were also the crew president for commercial real estate of women. So very, very involved in our real estate community and with excellent tenants and with excellent companies. So when I had said, I had shared with, I think, Shanna from Schmear and Furing, somehow I had mentioned to her that I mentioned it on the last book club that I was going to do Now Discover Your Strengths. She immediately sends me an email and says, oh, Ray Ottenhope talks about this book. And so I thought, oh, great. You know, a few months ago we had Dwayne Stiller on. And so it's fun for them to hear some other people other than my, voice,
I'm so happy to be here, and I think this is the neatest thing that you do, Beth. It's a real gift to the real estate industry, and I love this book. So anyway, I'm looking forward to talking
about it.
So let's
just jump in then. So my first question is, why? You know, I always find it interesting, why people pick up a book. You know, what attracts them to the book? Did someone recommend the book? Were you walking in the airport and you saw it, in one of those gift shops? So what caused you to pick this book up and read it?
Well, I think this book was recommended to me, but the whole idea of strength, really kind of self-discovery and understanding what you did well came out of some personal coaching that I had done over the years. So anyway, the theme and the concept just struck a note with me.
Yeah, I know, in the beginning of the book, and so just so for the book club, many times I tell my audience, you don't need to read the book, you can just listen to me and hear me go on and on, and I give you the cliff notes of the book. And in this case, but every once in a while, I say to them, okay, this is a book you should read because, for whatever reasons. And of course, this book, I hope that the audience members read because, obviously you take the survey and you find out what your dominant themes were. So I would say probably of the audience, my guess is hopefully 50% read the book. And I have some people that are going to be on the call that have emailed me that they wanted to jump in and talk about it. So usually that doesn't happen either, but I so love that and encourage it. So any of you on the call that want to jump in, speak up, or if you are shy, which I doubt that in our business, but you can email me and I can read your questions to Ray or myself if you want to email me the questions. But what I found was interesting right on page 3, and this is very thought-provoking, is when they said that for centuries mankind has pursued its fixation with fault and failing. They said doctors have studied disease in order to learn about health. Psychologists have investigated sadness in order to learn about joy, and therapists have looked into the causes of divorce in order to learn about a happy marriage. How I thought that was so interesting, that that's something I had never thought of before.
I know, and it really, for me, I think that I'm sure all have had similar experiences, when you look back over your life and figure out how much time you've concentrated on improving on weaknesses and how little time you spend focusing on strengths. It's almost like focusing on strengths is counterintuitive, and that's ridiculous.
Right. And how about, on page 6 they say that, and I was shocked, they had surveyed 1.7 million people or employees, 1.7 million employees in 101 companies from 63 countries, and they said, what percentage do you think strongly agrees that they have the opportunity to do what they do best every day? So 1.7 million people were asked, in your companies, what percentage do you get to work on your strengths? And shockingly to me, that the answer was 20%. 20% of all of those 1.7 million employees get to work on their strengths. So 80% of the day, they're not working on their strengths. And how much money do all these employers and companies spend on trying to improve the weaknesses of people? If they would just focus on their strengths another 10 or 20%, think about how the productivity could increase in all of these companies.
Beth, I think it goes back to just positive and negative. It's very easy. Everybody, it's easy to point out the weaknesses, and nobody ever looks for a solution of the weaknesses. I mean, we have found, I think that instilled doubt in people. They only focus on the weakness, and they forget about the strengths.
Right, and they could get more productivity out of everyone. So that's Deb Kofi. Yeah. Deb read the book, and she found out her dominant themes. About a month ago, right? After I had read the book and I said, Deb,
right.
You should read this book. This is great.
No, and I've already put it into a play at our office here, and it's made a huge difference just in communicating.
Because people now know what other strengths are, right,
exactly.
of people, and then they can play. Like what I loved is the whole managing around the weaknesses, and Ray, you know, you've managed a lot of people in leasing over your years with CBRE and Staubach. You know, one of the things that I always felt was necessary when I was managing my leasing teams were I may have the best cold caller around, but they might be the worst person as far as paperwork's concerned, or they might not build trust as much as, you know, the cold caller is getting out there and getting the people interested. So I always tried to team people up. If they were a good cold caller or a good canvasser, but they were not as successful with, you know, paperwork, but someone else, you know, loved doing the paperwork and the research, if I could team them up, then I created, I drew on the strengths of both.
Correct.
Instead of trying to improve the cold caller and say, you need to do your paperwork better, they didn't want to do their paperwork better.
Because people,
you know, and in the end, it was more productive for the company.
Well,
ahead,
I think one of the challenges that we all have, if we're really, you know, if we're honest with ourselves and we're real authentic about this, is that I think we often tend to be a little delusional about what we are. And so I think a lot of it is looking at yourself and accepting what you're really good at. Because, you know, it's so funny. I know when I interview people or we talk about what they're good at, everybody feels compelled to think that they're good, they're really good cold callers because it's expected in the business. I think
right.
That's one really good example. But the reality is that there's a percentage of people that are really good at it, and those people that aren't, you know, it's always on their list of to-dos, but they hate doing it. It always gets backed up to the
right.
to the end of the list. So it's amazing how much more productive we can be when we do exactly what you're talking about, which is partner people up according to what they do well.
And also, like you said, embracing what you do well. For, you know, I just started doing this coaching and the public speaking, and when you read in the book, you know, when I found out what my five dominant themes were and what that meant, and it says, you know, when you do something good or when you're using your talent, you walk away with, you know, God, I want to do that again. And you know, and when you embrace that and then like they say, work, you know, manage your weaknesses, where if paperwork or cold calling is not something that you know you love doing and you still need to do it, then you manage around it. But I think that embracing that talent, that, you know, and figuring out what is it that you love to do and you want to do more of, and what, you know, turns you on, and learning what that is, so that you can embrace life and have more success. Deb, were you going to say something?
Yeah, I was going to say too, we all have to do things we don't like to do. It may not be our strength, but it's not necessarily our weakness either. And I really kind of have my team geared to put that thing you don't like doing the first thing of the day, so you get it over with and you stop people from, I have to do this, it kind of stays on the list, and they do more mental machination with it rather than just biting it and getting it over with. And then they realize it really isn't so bad. It's part of the component of work. And then they're much more productive through the day.
Right. There was another part in the book that talked about how many times have you said to someone, I'm a people person? And they say, well, what exactly is that? And the vocabulary we all use, right, where you know, well, what is a people person? Well, to one person, a people person is someone that can work a cocktail party room. Another person is someone that can create relationships and trust and develop long-term relationships with people. So people person means a different things to a lot of different people. And this book, when you fill out the survey or the questionnaire and you find out what your five dominant themes are, they try to use different words and vocabulary to pinpoint it more. And I thought that was great, and that helped me a lot. Deb, what were one or two of the themes that you were?
Well, shockingly enough, achiever, and number one, and command on the last. But I will tell you how it impacted me is when you look at how they define it.
Right.
I really got to a point, I sometimes joke around here, I say things, and I say, am I speaking a different language?
Right.
But it's that dominant, the way I speak, now my team knows, it's not being just forgotten. It's really like I'm meticulous, they know it now, and we're really communicating much better. And where my right-hand person, when I had her take the test, the theme, you know, her top was analytical. And one of the things is she does a lot, but she doesn't communicate it. And I said, look, that leads me to just not communicating it, leads me to think you're not being productive, which ultimately gets to trust issues and theories by just not saying or passing by. So we're talking and coordinating much better, and we're getting a lot done. She gets a lot done anyway, but she knows I need to know.
Right. What about Ray? Would you share one or two of your themes?
Well, my number one was achiever as well, and it's that, you know.
Shocking.
It's like getting it done and mm-hmm. in the, you know, having to have that sense of accomplishment every day is so
right.
important. My second one is harmony. And I think that it's one thing, you know, it's interesting is in being able to understand what motivates, what drives people and what kind of their core strengths are is a really important skill in the business we're in, being able to read that. And so because I like, you know, I'm collaborative and I like to bring people together and figure out, you know, how do we take diverse ideas and make it happen? And I don't like a lot of conflict. But, you know, there's a place for conflict. There's sometimes you have to go into a battle. And if I'm going into a battle with somebody, I need someone who is not, you know, who doesn't mind taking on, that kind of conflict. Because,
right.
you know, I tend to move to a position of sometimes compromise and reconciliation too soon. There's a time and a place for everything. So it's just, you know,
you need an activator by you.
Yeah.
Well, that's who I am.
I'm an activator is my second as well.
My first is woo. My first is woo. So
that
I like to.
Total sense. That makes total
woo
sense.
People. And my second one is activator. But what I loved, my third one, which I loved, was maximizer. And maximizer is help. Not only do I want to maximize my strengths and talents, but one of my strengths is I try to maximize others.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so true with my whole mentoring. You know, I always want to, when I meet these kids or these young people in the business or even not, you know, I'm trying to always say, well, you know, you could do this or this or this, or have you tried this? Because I want them to be the best that they can be. And when I was reading that, it was great, to be able to read these themes. And again, everyone in the audience, if you haven't, you know, I get no commission from selling these books, I promise. But to read this book and to you have to buy the book, unfortunately, to get the code to go on the internet to fill out this questionnaire. But it's really very interesting, and they talk about in the book that, and I find this a lot with leasing teams, with good leasing agents. You know, it happened with me, and you know, I know it's happened with a lot of my friends. When you're a good leasing agent, you know, you always get tapped to be that leasing director. Just like a good teacher gets tapped to be the principal of the school, and they created the Peter Principle theory, where you know, it's not always the, in the best interest of you, your talents, and your strengths to get tapped to be the director of leasing. You know, you may want to love to cold call and canvas and work deals, and you may not want to manage people. And trust me, being that middle person between the leasing team and the bosses and the clients, it's not a fun job. And it's way more fun to go be a leasing agent and to close deals. And if you don't have, you know, that ego drive to want to be in that power position, you're way better off saying, you know, no, thank you. I'd rather, you know, stay in this role as, you know, the senior leasing agent. Alan Eskenazi, who worked with me for 11 years, you know, we were always asking him, do you want to come into management? And he was always smart and said, no way, I just like to do deals, you know. But we sometimes we're not strong enough, or we don't recognize our strengths enough to know that we should stay and do what we're doing. You know, now that I've been away from the corporate world, every once in a while someone will call me and say, hey, you want to come and run our, you know, company or run our leasing team or whatever. And I now know that what I love doing the book club. I love doing, you know, we did a ropes course. We're having a women's weekend. You know, I love running these events where we're doing waterworks on November 12th. I love the coaching and the training and the public speaking. I love all that stuff. There's no way I want to go back into the corporate world. I've just embraced this, and it just like it says in the book, if you leave and you want to do more, you know you're in the right place. Thank God I've, you know, found that after 26 years. I know I'm in the right place.
Yeah. Well, finding it is truly pleasurable. It's what turns you on. It's what makes you get up and want to get going in the day if you're doing what you love to do. But one thing I would say is that I can't remember if he discussed this or, but you know, your greatest strengths can be your greatest weaknesses as well. So I think, again, that self-awareness of when, you know, my compulsion to, get a lot done, really accomplish things. And, you know, it can also distract me from looking at big picture. I mean, you know, there are all kinds of downsides as well. So I think Understanding both the pros and cons of your strengths and how it all plays out is important.
Right. And in the back of the book, there's a whole section on if there are managers or supervisors on the phone, there's a whole section on how do you manage people. Like it has a section on how would you manage a person who has woo as the dominant theme, which is what I am. So if I had a manager, so I think that's very helpful to, you know, how to manage a person strong, you know, as the learner or the intellectual or the futuristic. And I think that's very helpful because I think there are classes of how to be a better manager, and there's, you know, webinars and all that stuff. But I think that if your team can take the survey, like Deb's team took the survey, now she knows what her people are, you know, what their strengths are, and then in the book they give you tips. I mean, Deb, did you go to the back of the book where it talked about how do you manage a person that is analytical, for example, your assistant?
Yes, and we both are we have a game plan, and we continue to work on that game plan. And I say it really improves the communication, and it changes the way we're working together for the better. And I think it also helped her deal with family members, because when you see this, you can't change relatives either. So when you start to figure out who they are, it helps in your overall life, improving it, and how
so
to talk to people.
Absolutely. So, Ray, one of the other questions I had for you is, wouldn't you just love sometimes to give the survey or the questionnaire to your clients?
Yeah, and, you know, that's interesting. But, you know, we often can't do that. So I think one of the important distinctions that you get when you start focusing on, you know, what people's core strengths are and how it all matches up and how you respond to them and all of that, is that the ability to read people and to figure out, you know, what their strengths are is really important. Because, you know, one of the big wows for me was realizing everybody doesn't see the world like I see the world.
We're not in your world today.
and that a lot of times we'll be really upset with somebody because of how they responded, and, you know, you think, oh, he's not being, he's really a bad guy, or he's really doesn't have integrity, or, you know, and it's really, it doesn't go to that level. That's kind of that gut reaction to things. So I think, you know, that ability to understand how perspectives are different, how people respond is different. It can help not only managing your people, but satisfying your clients.
Absolutely. That was a great thing that I picked up from this book. You mean not everyone just wants to, you know, show up and, like, I'm an activator, so I think it's similar to achiever. But, yeah, I want to get it done. You know, I look to buy properties, you know, and right now I'm looking at 6 different things to buy. And thank God I know that I'm not an analytical type, because I have to partner with people that – so I want – you know, I have a partner who might do the Argus or whatever. But you know, I'm always 10 steps ahead of everyone. Like they said in the Activator, they talk about, you know, you just want to take action and you believe you'll learn through doing, versus I have partners – who there's no way they're going to take action. They don't even want to make an offer on the deal until they've, done the due diligence and done the Argus and thought about the marketing and the market changes and the economics. And I'm like, let's just put an offer, you know. So I'm more instinctual, and it's worked, knock on wood, it's worked for me. But I absolutely know that I'm 10 steps ahead. They're 10 steps in a more risk-averse, slower pace, and that we recognize that about each other is so important, because before I used to say, why can't you see what I see? And that's now learning more about people and their strengths and how they react to things helps the whole situation, like, and helps everyone get along and get to the end game, you know, more calmer, because I'm always, you know, saying, let's do it. Not everyone has that mentality. Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think he used this terminology, but I've, there are starters and there are finishers. And I think for most of us, one of those two come naturally. There are offensive players and there are defensive players, and most of us fall into one of those two categories. And each are absolutely, I mean, they're critical. You got to have it all to get to the right result. So it's just a matter of knowing when you kind of should be putting people, when should people should come up to, step up to the plate, or, you know, the roles they play on teams or whatever.
Right. I thought it was great. On page 70, they talk about, it says, your early experiences as a child, you know, you have found yourself drawn to certain activities and repelled by others. You know, and I was rereading this on the plane ride home yesterday, and I was like, yeah, you know, when I was 8 or 10, I was trying to start a Girl Scout troop. You know, I was doing MDA fundraisers in my backyard. I was, you know, I loved group sports. I loved kickball and softball, and I loved organizing events. You know, in high school, you know, I would be the organizer, and I hated things like science fairs and arts projects we had to do in school. I hated that, you know, and it was so clear how early on, 8 years old, 10 years old, things that you loved to do then, how it's continuing in your life, you know, 40 years later. Mm-hmm. And throughout the whole book, I kept thinking, oh, yeah, and then that, you know, I like to do that in high school, or that I like to do in college. And before, whoever knew what I was going to do in my career? And I just thought that was very interesting when people think back, you know, what did you absolutely love to do when you were 8 years old, 12 years old, 16? And are you doing that now? Is that part of your career, or is it not? Deb, did you when you read that part in the book, did you think back about when you were a child?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I was second to the youngest of 5 kids, and I was always the leader of, we're going to do this, organize it, get it done. When we had the chores, it is very much part of take charge, and you kind of tend to find that you're the leader of the family as well. But I was always about a deal. I didn't babysit because that wasn't one of my strengths or things I wanted to do as a child. You know, so, but all, as I grew up,
but
I did things that were more business oriented.
You weren't a nurturer, probably.
I wasn't a nurturer, but I also was always looking at a bigger deal, always. Something that was a little more risk and not traditional, which is very much what my company is. I like
Ray,
it.
Ray, what about you? Did you think about over the,
well,
you know, when you were younger?
I was always, I really was the person that resolved the conflict.
You're the
harmony
guy.
I could bring the sides together. I could sit down and listen to the, you know, the various sides in an argument or, you know, whatever, and figure out what some common ground should be. So, and I think I can hear things because I think I have a good ability to listen and to understand where people are coming from. Where, you know, a lot of hard-charging people, you know, they don't have time to stop and you know, take note of those kinds of things. So, you know, I bring that insight to a project, a team, or whatever.
I loved more towards the end of the book, like 131, they talk about sometimes the strength is like minuscule, like making the most out of your strength is so close to, you know, it's a, like a couple phone calls away if you're a salesperson. They said, like in baseball, if you hit the ball successfully 270 times for every 1,000 plate appearances, you'd be a middling player. But if you could manage 320 hits per 1,000, you'd be one of the league's best. And then they talk about in sales. They said in the world of work, the difference between the struggling salesperson and the great one might be just 3 extra calls each week or 2 more emotional signals picked up during a presentation or 1 more fact tossed in at just the right moment of a conversation. The difference between being an exemplary mentor and the run-of-the-mill boss might be simply a few more questions asked. So it says to polish one theme so that it becomes a true strength will test your self-awareness and your resourcefulness. Mm-hmm. They say to hone all 5 is the work of a lifetime. So I think taking one of the themes, it may be the number one, it might be whichever one that you're drawn to. For example, I just started doing this public speaking thing. I really love it. And I'm going to hone that. That's the one I'm going to pick and go to more, like, conferences to teach me how to do it better and try to hone that one the best because that's the one that I'm getting juiced. Right now I'm getting juiced about. Now, who knows, in 2 years maybe I'll want to work on one of the other ones. But I loved that the difference between being the best and being average is just a few more phone calls for a salesperson.
Right.
What do you guys think about that?
I think it's true. I mean, my first theme is the achiever. And one of the things I never did was recognize the things that I've achieved. It's kind of the list. You go, and you don't even realize. It's taking the awareness and stepping back to acknowledge them. I have taken several of my 5 themes, and I'm trying to master one. Of each one, of the ideas. And I'm implemented and I become aware and we're conscious about it daily. That way we
have
can
you
slowly
seen any
get
changes?
Them all.
Have you seen any changes in you know, the end result since you've started this?
Really, most of them are more on the personal side of my life. That, yes, I've implemented and it's given me great pleasure, let me say it that way.
Which is great. That's what we
Which
want.
Which is good.
We want but to have pleasure.
And that's what I've had to learn to do, is say it's okay to have a personal life and pleasure and still do all the other things and balance them. It really is adding balance to my life.
And 144, they say, you know, regardless of the religious beliefs, they say, you know, there was a couple paragraphs about, I guess, a Benedictine convent leader, but they said no matter what your religious beliefs, the question, did you live your life, can be quite intimidating. It implies that you have a particular life that you're supposed to be living and that any other life is false or inauthentic. you know, it says you can learn that you're not making up your life as you go along. You learn that your successes and achievements are not accidental. Your signature themes are influencing every single choice you make. Your top five themes explain your successes and achievements. And this kind of self-awareness leads to self-confidence, that you are indeed living the life you were supposed to live. You know, I thought that was just so true, because when you start doing stuff that just gives you so much pleasure and gives you so much energy, and you feel like you're really embracing, you're in that place where, I mean, I thought I loved doing what I was doing before, you know, but then people, but now that I'm doing this, and I'm doing more coaching, and I'm doing, you know, the book club, and, you know, all these other things that I'm doing, people say, you look so much happier. And I feel so much happier. So I can't, you know, say enough about how figuring out what really juices you, what are you really happy doing, and hopefully you make money doing it. And if you can connect the thing that gives you pleasure and the things that really juices you up and you make money, how fabulous is that?
Yeah. I think to your point of really being very deliberate about and very focused on what you're trying to accomplish, because, you know, I think that so often, and this is true with coaching, this is true with things we read, there's a good idea or, you know, good ideas, and we have the greatest intentions, and then we fall back to our old habits. So I would say being, you know, very, you know, to be as uncompromising as possible, to really take some of these ideas and stay with it if you think they're good ideas. And by the way, the thing that I love about Marcus Buckingham, and I'm far from an analytical person, but all of the statistics that he uses, because, you know, the fact that he came out of, he comes from that kind of background of being, you know, extremely analytical and having a lot of evidence to prove points. So I found that to be very good. And I did, we had him speak, it was probably about 4 years ago at a Staubach conference, and he was quite good. He was really good.
Wow. Oh, I'm so envious.
But it was also interesting because I don't know whether you remember, he comments in here about speaking. He had his speech, which was phenomenally dynamic, it was so programmed. You could just tell that, you know, what it took, you know, for him to step up in front of this crowd and speak with as dynamic, you know, in the dynamic manner that he did. I don't think it came off fabulously well, and he's an incredibly good speaker, but I don't think it's natural to him. I think it's something that, you know, he has developed because he's had to, so.
Oh, well, I think his
research is very direct, though, in identifying people. I mean, I do see it in business. I mean, and as you read the book or become more familiar with, one, yourself, your five themes, but in the other themes as well, it really does help you in every aspect of your life, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
I agree.
I agree. A couple announcements before we come back to finish up the call. First of all, I want to thank Alana Hogan, who's on the call. She sent me a book. I obviously love to read. She sent me a book called The Go-Giver. So thank you, Alana, and I can't wait to read it, and maybe it'll be a future book club collection. The next book is going – I'm continuing on this theme. The next book is called Strengths-Based Selling, and it is by Tony Rutigliano and Brian Brim. And it continues the same concept from what this is called, the Clifton Strengths Finder. So those of you that are going to read Strengths-Based Selling, I highly recommend you get Now Discover Your Strengths so you can find out what your strengths are. But we're going to talk about how we take these strengths and become better salespeople. So hopefully everyone will be interested in that. That will be on October 26th. It's on a Wednesday because on that Thursday I'm going to be in Tallahassee and can't have the call that Thursday. Also, I'm conducting a webinar for ICSE on September 28th. For those of you that were at the Orlando ICSE, it's a repeat of my How Leasing is Like Dating. It's very humorous, very funny, but full of content. So if you were in the iPad session, which I heard 500 people were in that session at the same time as mine, and you missed my session, please sign in or sign up on icsc.org on September 28th for How Leasing is Like Dating. It's very fun, a lot of fun. And then lastly, on November 12th, I know some of you were involved or attended our ropes course where, Ray, I had leasing agents up 30 feet high. Deb was one of them,
yes,
jumping off a platform. I mean, talk about expanding your professional and personal, you know, reobtaining professional and personal mojo after 3 years of this crazy economic times we've been in.
Oh, my God.
So
exactly.
I
went blinded.
Yeah, she did. I told people, they said, well, what is the ropes course? I said, if I tell you, I have to kill you. So we had about, I think, 18 or 19 people attend the ropes course. We have a waterworks course coming up on November 12th, and it's similar. It's not height related. This one's in the water. And for those of you interested, go to the website, and it's going to be a lot of fun, and, you know, it's going to be a great time. So as we wind up, but I want to ask Ray, any other books you recommend?
I like Marcus Buckingham's First Break the Rules or whatever. I think really every one of his books are good. So if this rings true to you, then I would recommend you maybe pick up a couple of his other things. And I think there's a sequel to this that's kind of that helps you explore your strengths a little better, in more depth that would be good. But,
I think that's a strengths-based selling. By Marcus, but it's kind of a sequel, but it's focused on selling. So that's why I wanted to.
Yeah, well, that sounds like that should be a really good sequel. So anyway.
And any other advice you have for, you know, 30 years and all these tenants you represent, C.B. Richard Ellis, Staubach, you know, most of the people on the call are in leasing. So, any, you know, three pieces of wisdom you can give for them to continue their success in this wonderful world of commercial real estate.
Well, I think that that the first thing I would say is that if you have a plan and you work a plan and you know where you're going, it will work. Because I always like to laugh and say, if you've got a plan, if you can live long enough, it'll all come together. The other thing that I would say that I think about a lot is, am I working in my comfort zone or outside of my comfort zone? Because I think we really do have to push ourselves. And, you know, I love it when I have that little edge or that little uneasy feeling because I'm in new territory. And I think we just have to push ourselves to do that every single day. And it's a marathon, not a sprint, this business. So, you know, looking at the big picture is really important. And the relationships and friends along the way are so important. It is amazing how that comes back to benefit you and how it makes this so much more fun and your life so much more meaningful. You know, Beth and I have never spent a lot of time together, but, boy, she's had such influence on me, and she doesn't even know it.
And vice versa. And I think that the relationships I've built in this industry, and that's why I love doing these ropes course or waterworks, or we're going to have a girls' weekend in April. I love these small groups because you get to spend more than 5 minutes. That's why I like the bus tours. You know, I think they're coming to Atlanta, Ray, but we started, Gary Broitus and Larry Brooks started this bus tour program down here. And, you know, I don't really, nothing against the properties, but, you know, I'm usually the moderator, so I'm not paying attention much to the properties unless we've stopped the bus and we're walking around the property. But the ability to spend 8 hours with people, more than a five-minute, hi, how are you, at an ICSC is unbelievable. I've had more relationships strengthened in the last three bus tours I've gone on than in the 20 years of, you know, doing deals or just, you know, you can only do so many deals with so many people, but to be able to spend a long amount of time with someone, and trust me, when you're with 10 of your closest friends and you're about to jump off a 30-foot platform, you get really close really quick. So we have that group that did that. We'll be tight forever.
You're bonded, absolutely.
Bonded forever. Something that you said, you know, it touched a nerve. You know, you said I like being on the edge. You know, I the shopping center group asked me to be a speaker at one of their university in Atlanta last year, and it started off it was going to be an hour, and then it was going to be 2 hours, and then all of a sudden it turned out I was going to be 6 hours speaking to their landlord leasing group, and I was talking to my friend Laura Lynch. And, you know, and I said, I'm really nervous. I mean, 6 hours. I can talk for an hour or 2 hours, but 6 hours. And she said, you know, if you're not uncomfortable, you're not learning, right? And that touched a nerve in my head, that in my heart, that she's so right, that, you know, you got to push yourself. And if you're a little uncomfortable, that's okay, because that means you're learning. And I just love that. And that really helped me, you know, go out there and embrace it. And I enjoyed it so much, and we had a good time. But
I bet it was fabulous.
It was so much fun. We had a good time. So we're at the end of our call. You know, it was great, Ray. Deb, thank you for participating. You know, I've had some emails from participants that said, you know, now that we've had this since January, people want to start participating. So I more than enjoy everyone to read Strengths-Based Selling, get on the call in October, and speak up. Because I think everyone gets more out of it, and it's just, you're not just hearing me drone on and on. So have a great September, everyone. Ray, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I love being part of this, Deb. Great to meet you.
Deb, thanks so much. And
nice
you guys
go
have a great September.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.